Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, Dan. Our brother's here.
Hey.
Hey, you like making great money, right? Well, here's a really cool opportunity that we had to share with you driving with Uber.
Yes, Uber is that popular smartphone app that connects riders with drivers. We take Uber a bunch.
Yes.
We love them.
Love
them. And in chatting with the different drivers, some of them have really interesting stories as to why they drive with Uber.
And you know what? We have a rider here today who has a great story. Tell him, Dan.
So in December, I make a trip to none other than exotic Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Why? It was a bachelor party for a friend of mine. Nonetheless, Oklahoma State football game. After the game, we need a ride home. There's 100,000 people. So what do? We call Uber.
Yes.
Who picks us up? Hunter.
Yeah.
How do we find Hunter out of hundreds of thousands of people at this big college football game? His car has Christmas lights.
Yes.
On the inside. Hunter gave us a ride home. It was great. Really appreciated the ride. The next day, we're in Oklahoma still. What do? We call Uber, get back downtown. Who picks us up? Marissa.
Mm.
Marissa gave us a great ride downtown. Later that day, we call an Uber because we need to get back home. Who shows up?
Marissa.
Twice in one day. Marissa, two rides, one driver. Couldn't get better than that.
Now, here's the thing. In Norman, Oklahoma, there seems to be a dearth of drivers. If you're out there, if you're in Norman, Oklahoma, and you have a car and a license, this is the perfect opportunity for you.
Yes. There's something I know about Uber drivers is that they love being their own boss.
Mm-hmm.
They earn great money.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to start. You just need a car and a license. And driving with Uber is great for anyone who needs flexibility that includes parents and students. And now is the prime time to cash in driving with Uber. You will thank us later for telling you how to get paid every week. We could be getting into your car when you drive with Uber.
Especially if it's in Norman, Oklahoma. You've got a car and a license. Put them both to work for you and start earning serious, life-changing money today. Sign up to Drive with Uber. Visit drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com.
Drivewithuber.com.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Secret Middle East Negotiations, a.k.a. Got My Peace Tucked.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Elliot Stuff, a.k.a. All Gould Everything.
Hi, this is Dave Warren from Chromeo.
And this is a waste of time, but this is the real.
Wow.
Dave, welcome back to the Upper West Side.
Yes.
It's not usual to have, like, a real, like, Upper West Sider come back to the Upper West Side. Usually we have people who come in here occasionally. You spent time here because...
Yeah. Because
Columbia University.
Yeah, which doesn't make me a real Upper West Sider.
No, you were a tourist.
Yeah, I was. But yeah, I guess I spent like 7 years up here.
That's pretty good time.
Yeah.
You did a bid.
Yeah. So, you know, the Coronet pizza slices.
That's right.
And the Seinfeld diner. And
all that.
And yeah, so I know that. The Apple Tree Supermarket. Shout out to the Apple Tree Supermarket on Amsterdam.
Yep.
And 110.
Did you?
One, no. 112, I don't know.
Did you go to Absolute Bagel?
I've gone there a couple of times. Yeah.
Oh, not a fan?
It seems like you don't love it.
I don't do the New York bagels.
Oh, right.
You guys know that about
me. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, yeah.
If there's one thing I know about you.
Yeah.
If there's one thing you know about me is I do the Montreal bagels. So.
A couple things to start off. First of which is that we have a whole bunch of cut up vegetables here with hummus because you were kind enough to invite us to the, I guess it's called like the Fool's Gold holiday party at your brother's place.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, your brother's old place.
When he still lived in New York.
When he still lived in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And we can't, actually, before we went down there, we're like, do you need anything? Like, what can we bring? Because everyone was supposed to bring something else.
Yes.
And
it was a potluck.
Yeah, it was a potluck.
And we brought...
Well, we were instructed.
We were told to bring vegetables, cut of vegetables.
And we're like, cool. So we were actually up in Westchester at the studio, and we were like, we don't have a lot of time, but we're going to rush down back to the Upper West Side, run to Whole Foods, get like the nicest stuff we could, cut it up, bring some like hummus or whatever, and race down all the way to Brooklyn. And we made it there on time, brought like two big Tupperware.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you can be on time to like a 6 hour long party.
Yeah.
Sure.
But our friends Karen Rose and Nick Catchdubs gave us a heads up. They're just like, all right, probably gonna be like 30 people or so. Bring enough vegetables. So we brought like two huge things of vegetables.
What happened?
Went through one of them. Everyone loved it.
And this, like, is the second one.
That is not the second one. But
it's been a killer 8 months.
At the end of the night, it was just, we were some of the last people to go.
Uh-huh.
We took a picture. We talked about some things in business. And then we went to get our coats from the bedroom.
Yeah.
And we were like,
and
all
in
right.
That time.
Well, we were like, we're going to grab the extra Tupperware
yeah.
and roll.
A-track. Took the other one and left it in his... Like, he took it and put it in his refrigerator. He stole our Tupperware.
And we were like, this is very Seinfeldian.
What's the rule? I mean, what's
We didn't know.
Yeah, we didn't know.
Because we thought, you know, at a certain point, it's very like, maybe we're like, you know, sort of giving it forward or whatever the phrase is, you know?
Yeah.
We're sort of...
But isn't the rule when you show up at a potluck that pretty much everything that you bring stays the property of... The potluck E, I mean, aka the host,
including the Tupperware.
Yeah, oh, the Tupperware itself. You guys wanted? I thought the Tupperware. Oh, so he stole the
actual Tupperware.
Cupcake.
Yeah.
Oh, that's strange.
Yeah,
that's weird.
Well, we were in a, like it was like a Larry David like Seinfeldian situation. Yeah, then, we're like, what do you do?
Yeah, what do you? I mean, you could.
We don't want to be a rude guest and be like, well, so we were like, have a good one. Well, you know, thanks for having us. We'll see you later.
Weird.
And it has stayed there.
Anyway,
so,
we stole something else from your brother's apartment just to make
we
up
just
for
won't,
it.
Yeah, we yeah, won't say what
a,
it is.
You took a Technics turntable from the gold ones from the DMC championships. Great. He wouldn't know the difference. Yeah.
But that was a great time.
Yes.
You are Canadian, but you've lived in New York for a while.
13 years.
And so do you consider yourself still a Canadian through and through, or are you more American now?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have an American passport.
Okay. So, really?
Yeah, I still have a Canadian passport, so...
At what point do you have to get one?
I guess you do a green card. My brother got a green card. So...
Did he steal it?
He hasn't? No. That's one piece of plastic that he doesn't steal. Yeah.
But you're originally from Montreal.
Yeah.
How often do you make it back there?
Not enough, although I was just there.
Okay.
I was in Montreal last week. I went on a little vacation thing, but
parents still live up there.
Parents are up there. I go up there, I don't know, I want to say like twice a year, three times a year.
Now, last week's podcast, or actually last week since our podcast, we were shouted out by the New York Times, which is super nice of them.
Yeah.
And that's one of those posts that you put on Facebook where like you end up where a lot of random people will get in touch with you.
Yeah.
My high school prom date, who you don't really hear from, she hit me up and she was like, congratulations, when I was in PR, this is a big thing. And it's like, I guess it still is. It's cool.
Yeah.
When you put things on Facebook, do you find you have people from Montreal hitting you up that you haven't heard from in forever?
Yes, although I'm not on Facebook and I don't check Facebook.
Okay.
but I do have a Facebook page. I think I log on like twice a year, if that.
You go to Montreal more than you log on Facebook.
Yeah, and when I log into my Facebook, it is a lot of old Montreal friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool. I got mad love for them. I'm just not a Facebook person.
Yeah. Right. So. Do you still have the same phone numbers back then?
No, in Montreal, it was another area code.
Sure.
So it was actually my phone number in Montreal was 576 Dave.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you had to customize, or did it just work out that way?
Customized.
Wow.
I asked for the numbers.
That is like the dopest thing I've ever heard.
514-576 Dave.
Wow. That's like the Sir Mix-a-Lot of. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. This is in the Nokia with the worm.
Wow.
That era.
Yeah.
Have you tried calling that number recently?
I have not. but I do have the same phone number as I had when I first moved to New York. So
that's good.
Kept it for. Yeah.
You haven't been hacked, or you haven't had to give up your phone plan or anything.
You haven't gone Hollywood. That's the real message here. Yeah. You've just gone New York.
Yeah.
Your brother's gone Hollywood, technically.
He has.
Is he getting tan?
Doesn't tan. He gets red. There's blemishes. Weird ingrown hairs start to pop up. Doesn't tan. And anyways, he travels too much. So
right.
He's in Ibiza now,
Ibiza, and he's actually coming back to New York tomorrow. We're going to chill for a day, and then he's going to go to L.A. to prep Fool's Gold Day Off Los Angeles.
That's awesome. Speaking of Fool's Gold, we've only been to the New York, Brooklyn ones, but we've gone every year. And it's always exciting for us to see the headliners, certainly, and all
this
the acts.
This year's going to be interesting.
Yeah. This year is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I'd say so. Meek Mill is headlining this year.
Yeah.
But in prior years, you've had people like Juicy J and French Montana and The Lox and Cameron and
Ferg, Rocky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny. All these amazing artists. Which one of all those has been the most like affecting for you?
So I guess, I don't know if the people that listen to the podcast know my involvement in Fool's Gold, because I might be the Chromeo guy. I don't know.
Anyway,
I've been sort of involved, you know, on a behind-the-scenes consigliere level with Fool's Gold since the start of the label.
How many people have you murdered?
I don't do the dirty work.
Right.
I'm more like the guy who gives the kiss of death.
Sure.
We've got the...
Yeah.
We got the shooters for that. But... wow. I am, you know, behind that label, and I own it along with A-Track and Nick, and so I'm super proud of what they've done. And even though my involvement is a little more detached, like Fool's Gold Day Off, I'm like, you guys, I come out, and you know, it's always a really great thing. And it's, I'm sort of honored to be a part of it. And it was a way for Alain and me, Alain, aka A-Track, to sort of, you know, pay homage to New York City and Brooklyn for kind of welcoming us and making us feel welcomed over the years, and sort of carry the torch that we felt was passed down to us from our elders, aka like the whole Fat Beats generation,
right,
the Raucous generation, you know, all the guys that I came up under, you know, Stretch, Bob, Nonfiction, yeah, you know, LP, those guys. So it was like kind of our way to, like, you know, keep that tradition going and blend in electronic music and kind of stay really true to what we're about today. And also, like, the sense of humor, and also, like, you know, having Nick Catchdubs, whom you guys know as a colleague on an editorial level, you mm-hmm. have that kind of editorial voice too, blending yeah, yeah. in with the label. Anyway, so my favorite Fool's Gold Day Off, let's see, Juicy J.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah, because I felt like that was, you know, when things were starting to turn. I mean, you know, Lex Luger beats and,
yeah.
and sort of the new slang, and Juicy had brought out the ASAP guys, and yeah. there was that, like, super drugged up thing
yeah.
starting. And I really feel like that was the beginning of a new paradigm that we're still very much part of.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And then I thought last year when French brought out, like, all this money, Bobby
Shmurda, the GS9 guys.
Yeah. I thought that was really fun. I mean, those guys, just the dances were just
amazing. Yeah, yeah. You
know? The Juicy thing was really awesome because it was a Southern artist who was just destroying in New York. Yeah. He was at City
and
Winery.
And nobody had brought him.
No.
Yeah.
And A-Trax had a relationship with him since the Kanye days.
Did you know that?
That they had a relationship?
Yeah. They were tight since the Kanye days. Since Alan was on tour with Kanye.
Yeah.
And DCJ. And my brother is an old school 3-6 fan from when we lived in Montreal.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But when I say 3-6, it's not just, it's the whole Hypnotized Mind.
Yeah.
We're talking Le Chat.
Yep.
We're talking Project Pat.
Sure. Yeah.
We're talking Crunchy Black.
Yep.
You know, the whole squad. And so we've always loved those dudes.
Little White? Okay, yeah.
Chin strap. I know Little White. So him and Juicy have always been tight, and I think that was like that was Juicy J's first solo headline show in New York.
For sure. And if you were there, you could see the potential, which would later sort of come to fruition through Wiz and that whole team.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, you could see that he was going to team up with, like, Katy Perry. Like, you could see. Yeah,
I mean, great vision.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he's got. He does have a pop ear.
Oh, for sure.
But there's this other, you know, sort of weird accidental thing with Juicy J, is that he happens to be best friends with Dr. Luke.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I think you guys must have read that article.
Sure. Like, yeah. Brothers, yeah. You know, yeah.
So
yeah.
There's also a very sort of convivial weird thing that happens with him in pop music. But yeah, he's awesome. I mean, he's, you know, for people like us who are really into authentic regional rap and also have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
He sort of exemplifies, like, he's one of the greatest, you know, examples of that.
Yeah. I love when artists really hit their stride, even if it's like a second wind later on in life.
Well, that's the best part.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of our, I feel, again, like a lot of our favorites, you know, have had that sort of dual career. I mean, Cam.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, Cam's had it a bunch, but, you know, even like MF Doom in a weird way, right? And then Juicy and
my favorite example
is like Two Chainz.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, sure. Love that. He's late in rapper life, but this is the prime of his career.
Yep.
Which mm-hmm. is wild.
Somehow I was very early on Titty Boy and I was late on Two Chainz.
Hmm.
Me too. I was I could say that. I didn't get the mixtape Two Chainz. I was like that I sort of missed out on that, unfortunately.
So when you met Cameron and he brought Dame Dash with him. Mm-hmm. What was that like for someone who, I mean, when we saw you at the Apollo and you were DJing ahead of the Chromeo set, you were like strictly Harlem stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, just for the record, you played ASAP stuff, you played Big L, you played Mace, you played Cameron, you did not play
Herb McGruff. I know. Rest in peace.
You did not play Mims.
Yeah, Eric was very disappointed.
No Mims.
Rest in peace, Big L. Rest in peace. What's his name? Hud?
Hud. Yeah, Hud 6. Yeah.
Yep. But I didn't play any Herb McGruff. I didn't play any Mims.
Nope.
I didn't play, what else would be like?
Lil Mama.
Didn't play Lil Mama. Yeah. I mean, Mims would have been cool.
No.
Sure. I mean, we went to a Mims concert.
We did go to a Mims concert. Yeah. Out in Long Island. He wow. played...
he played This Is Why I'm Hot 3 times.
And the remix.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, you it was, Canada
is
more.
I mean,
yeah.
I, it was listen, a lot.
It was a perfect Mims show.
I really like that song.
There, yeah. was, there was a specific time.
Yeah.
But 2006.
Yeah. which I think is going to come... Like, that's there's going to be, like, a nostalgia. I mean, there already is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I did a random corporate gig this weekend, and they played Lumi D before I came on. So wow. maybe that's going to be a thing.
Wow.
Like, yeah. Like, I guess, like, the like now we're still, like, at the tail end of, like, the Rockefeller Rough Riders nostalgia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the next wave will be, like, the 06. I mean, yeah.
I mean, we were talking to Nick Catchdubs, what, like, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and he was really excited about, like, the Mandy Moore renaissance
yeah,
coming
but
back.
He's really advanced. I mean, his nostalgia is way ahead of the curve.
Sure.
I can say. I mean, I'm never sure what part of, like, the cycle he's in. But yeah, it was cool. I mean, to answer your question, I just said what's up to Cam and Dan.
Yeah.
Like, my brother's really the one with the relationship
sure.
with those guys. And mm-hmm. I'm very much... I don't really need to have personal relationships with my favorite musicians or artists. I'm very happy to just enjoy them on record,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the guys that I'm cool with are sort of more personal connections,
yeah.
you know, than A-Track, who's literally cool with everybody.
Sure,
he's got
right.
relationships with everybody.
Yeah, you know?
Right.
So, but it was great.
Is I that mean, because you've been disappointed by people?
No,
okay.
not at all. No, it's just because, like, I guess. It's more my personality. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, again, I come from a literature background.
Sure.
So I've always had this thing where you really separate the author from the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just like, I mean, I say what's up and it's cool when
yeah.
they know I'm A-Track's older brother and some of them know Chromeo. And I mean, I've become cool with some guys over the years, but like, it's just, it's really kind of personal chemistry.
Yeah.
More
yeah.
than like, yo, Cam, you know, I love Purple Haze.
Yeah.
And, talk to me about Mizzle.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't really... I'd rather joke about that. I don't need to... You know,
yeah.
I'm actually more comfortable talking about that with you guys in Minya
sure.
than I am with Cam himself.
Yeah.
You know
right.
I mean, like, so...
Totally.
Yeah.
But you don't Chris Farley out on people.
Right.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was watching the documentary last night.
Yeah.
Oh, is it
so
good?
Crazy.
It is crazy.
It's sad. It's too sad.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, is it well done?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. There's been a whole bunch of those... We saw the Amy documentary, Amy Winehouse.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, like you just like leaving your like the theater, and you're just like,
you're
oh, so
yeah,
like,
yeah,
no kidding.
Yeah, it's a little bummed.
Have you seen the movie The Wolfpack?
Yep.
Okay, we saw it, and we ran into two of those guys.
Oh wow!
Madison Square Park.
We should probably say what the movie is.
Sure,
it's like a family of what, 6 children,
mm-hmm.
and
I think they've more than that. But yeah,
well, there's the girl.
Yeah,
but like none of them like are allowed out of the apartment.
Yeah, you got her. You got her. Let's go.
But none of them are allowed out of the apartment for the first 15 to 18 years of their lives.
Right.
On the Lower East Side of Manhattan,
because their father has a god complex, thinks he's very enlightened, and does not want to let them out into the city that he's chosen to live in.
But mm-hmm. also, like, it's that the mother is teaching the kids, like, homeschooling them, and the father is using whatever the state pays her
to live.
Because he doesn't want to, like, have a job. Like,
I got confused when that movie came out, because there's another wolf pack, actually, in Harlem.
Really?
Really?
Well, yeah.
Like...
89 Wolfpack and We Wildin'.
Oh.
Remember that?
Wow, that would be very confusing. Like,
yes.
You, that's a very
you know that
movie.
Song, right?
Yeah.
So, do you guys remember the story? And that's another, and you'll remember the name of the doc. I can't remember it. But there was these rapes in Central Park, and these Harlem teenagers got
yeah.
unjustly
yes.
charged.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's
yeah.
a documentary that came out on that like
yeah,
2 years ago.
On
correct.
PBS. Yeah.
yeah, on PBS.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done by
Ken Burns.
Ken Burns, yeah.
And everybody saw it and everybody talked about it.
Yes. Right.
So that gang
mm-hmm.
That used to run in the park and
yeah.
wild out,
mm-hmm.
actually Wilden, that's they coined that term. They
right.
were called
yeah.
the Wolfpack.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and Jim Jones makes a reference to that.
Yeah.
But I also... Rest in peace, Rock Raider.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He used to also run with those guys.
Really?
Rock Raider is one of the first guys who hooked up my brother with the Dipset
right.
years ago. So, and Rock Raider was one of my brother's mentors.
Yes.
So when I lived on 122nd, those guys would come over. We'd hang with my brother and all that and be like, oh, man, I know all about this neighborhood because, you know, we used to wild out. Like, we were part of the Wolfpack and stuff. And so for me, Wolfpack was always this. It was these Harlem teenagers, and then some of which got super, like, you know, scandalously and unjustly accused of this rape pattern that was going on. Anyways, so now this new movie comes out with the Wolfpack, and I'm like, well, and everybody tells me about it, and I'm like, I've seen this movie. I know this movie. Isn't this a movie from 3 years ago? I know all about it. In fact, I know the whole story. And I start rapping the Jim Jones thing, and everybody, I don't know if that's the Wolfpack. It took me forever. Anyways, I went to see it. I need to know something about the movie, because the wardrobe is really on point.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I want to know if it's some, like, Vice intern who was like, all right, kids, like, why don't you wear this?
Oh, right. Something we should tell the people is that
to keep their minds,
like, you know, sort of intact and creativity intact, they would reenact, they would transcribe and reenact full movies, like Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs.
Or Batman, like maybe the full Batman costume out of cardboard.
And the thing is, I get that they've been living in a vacuum, and that, you know, they sort of made their lives out of found objects in that apartment in the Lower East Side, and it's extremely compelling. But I think, you know, when you see that film in Williamsburg on a Thursday night, and those kids are dressed like, you know, straight out of Beacon's Closet, but in the best possible way, you know, I mean, the bolo ties are on fleek, and, like, there's, you know, I mean, the coifs are just tremendous, and the denim is in shades of blue that you'll just never see anymore in a normal store. I mean, it's just so on point. And it's like, you wonder if someone in that film tried to play up the accidental hipster aspect of those kids. I wonder. That was my only thing.
Wow, conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy stylists theory.
We should have asked them when we saw them in Madison Square Park.
We saw two of them.
That's right. What was the deal? You know? Like, anyways, but it was a great film. I don't know how we got to that.
All right. Well, let's take it back to Montreal. Mm-hmm. When you were growing up with your brother, where did music come into your life? Like, obviously your parents played you music, or?
Yeah. Our parents don't play music, don't play instruments, but there was always music in the house. And I mean, I think this story is going to be super relatable to a bunch of people, I'm sure, including you guys.
Yeah.
But, like, our parents are part of the baby boomer generation, so that kind of soundtrack was what we grew up with, you know, from Van Morrison to Dylan to the Stones. And basically, as I grew up and learned about music myself, sort of very zealously and in a very nerdy way, I tried to listen to the stuff that was part of the baby boomer canon that my parents were not into. So it could have been, you know, Hendrix and Zeppelin or whatever. I mean, that was, like, not really their thing. So I got into that and, you know, played guitar like everybody else my age, you know, skateboarded and you know, kind of just loafed around and drank 40s like every other teenager my age. And at one point, you know, hip hop came along in the form of, I can't remember if it was, you know, So What You Want or Cypress Hill.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of very compatible with the lifestyle and the culture that I was into. And So What You Want or Cypress Hill became the gateways to Tribe and Pharcyde.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tribe and Pharcyde became the gateways to Mobb Deep and Nas. And then after that, it was a rap.
Yeah.
I put away the guitar. You know, I kind of did my homework, watched Wild Style and Style Wars, and started writing graffiti. And,
well, yeah. And your name comes from your tag, right?
Yeah.
So did you do the four elements? Were you out there, like, b-boying, rapping, doing graph? Were you waiting? The fourth element is waiting for Yeezys online, right?
That's the fifth element. I guess. For us, it was like you just had to pick one element.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I was into graph, and then I sort of pushed my brother to start DJing really young, and then I started making beats. You know, that was my thing.
Everybody thinks that Canadian hip-hop originated with Drake, including Google. I looked up first Canadian rapper, and Drake came up.
Yeah.
But Maestro has the biggest selling rap song ever until Drake came around in 2008.
Wow. Canadian rap song, you mean, right?
Yeah. I don't mean, like, ever.
I mean, it's strange because I came from Montreal,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I think that Montreal on a Canadian level, Montreal hip-hop might have gotten a little bit shunned by the generation of Toronto hip-hop that preceded Drake.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some really great artists in there. You know, Socrates was amazing, Choclair. I mean, but I can name you other guys that we were down with, you know, Citizen Kane and I mean, I never knew Cardi, but, you know, we were fans, of course. And I mean, and then on the West Coast, you had your the Swollen Members and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because my manager, like, to this day with Chromeo, I mean, he used to work with those dudes.
Really?
Yeah, we met on some hip-hop shit years ago.
Crazy.
But, you know, Swollen were down with, they were down with the Soul Assassins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so they had that whole connection. But, yeah, there was a Canadian scene, and Montreal was a little bit marginal. So we sort of, we couldn't kind of get on with the Toronto cats. So we discovered, I mean, this is, again, this is when I'm like 18, but we discovered like the New York indie hip hop scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way, my brother, through Rock Raider and, you know, Stretch and Bob and those guys, he sort of had an in with those dudes. And that's how myself and A-Track, again, when we were still teenagers, kind of got down with Fat Beats.
Yeah.
And started putting out records where basically it's our, like, our homies from high school that used to rap, and I used to make beats, and A-Track used to cut, and then, you know, we'd get an Ill Bill feature or whatever. Again, this is like 1998, 99 right. or whatever. But that's how we got on, and we did it outside of Canada because we were from this, like, marginalized city where most people don't even, you know, where rapping in English was secondary, you know, because, like, most of the labels were signing French rappers and stuff. So that's how we got on, and I've got really amazing memories of coming down to New York and going to the Stretch and Bob show, or going to the New Eureka Poets Cafe for, like, the Bobito night, or going to Tramps and seeing, you know, a Necro and Cage show. And again, like, I'm 19, yeah, and I'm super impressionable, but and this is pre-Chromeo, and this is in my, like, sort of previous, you know, musical experience, but I'll say this, like, one of the greatest feelings I've ever had in my life was to walk into Fat Beats and see my record there with, like, a little handwritten label of, like, yo, dope Canadian hip hop. You know,
that's
so
awesome.
Yeah, it's how we cut our teeth, and then what, basically, to make it super simple, like, it felt like the whole indie hip hop phase was coming to an end around the time where, like, everybody, including us, starting getting a little jiggier, listening to, like, DMX and, like, you know, all those Memphis Bleak club songs.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, Sorry Miss Jackson, which was actually dope, and a club records.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, like, a lot of the rappers I was working with wanted different kinds of beats that I didn't know how to make, because I was really making, like, just, like, Lord Finesse beats. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know how to make a Swizz beat. I didn't have a Triton. And so right at that time, I guess I started listening to different kind of music, and the rap stuff, I lost a little bit of interest, or I also felt like I wasn't really equipped to make those kinds of records anymore. And then I P and I, who's my best friend since I was a kid, started working on another project, and that project eventually, 5 years later, became Chromeo.
So did you know from the beginning when you guys started working together that you were going to have programmed drums and it was just going to be you guys?
Yeah. Well, yeah, pretty much. Because basically, like, we looked at it like, you know, I am too young to remember when Cameo and Midnight Star were popping, and also, or Hall & Oates for that matter, and also, like, that's not what my parents listened to, and also that stuff wasn't popping that much in Montreal to begin with, you know?
Right.
So I really discovered all that funk music when I was making rap beats, and I would buy pretty much every record imaginable with a person with an afro on the cover. Like, that was my policy.
To sample? Okay, yeah, yeah.
But then the thing is, like, when you get into that mindset, you're also listening to those records too. You know what I mean? Like, because I was friends with, like, record collectors, and I was buying, like, the DJ Muro cassettes, you know, with all the samples on them, and I was going to A1 here in New York. And it's also like, if you can't sample from a record, you can just listen to it. It's great.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's the same pleasure. So there was a lot of 80s records that, you know, you couldn't really sample, but we would just love listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And also P, my friend, was really into West Coast hip hop, so he would love listening to them anyway. Mm-hmm. And we like that kind of music, and we've always been into, you know, weird West Coast stuff, like DJ Quick and you know, but also like Selly Cell and like all those crazy Jerry Curl rappers that nobody knows about or nobody knew about, you know, in Montreal. And so... We at one point we looked at it like it was almost the way, like, you know, probably when, like, some of those guys were like, yo, David Axelrod, no one sampled that. And then the Beatnuts and Madlib were like, okay, and just had a field day and sampled everything. We were like, wait, like, all this, like, you know, for lack of a better term, or like, this Jerry Curl funk music, this 80s funk music, like, it's not about sampling, but, like, no one's even referenced that.
Right.
And yet it plays at every bar mitzvah and every, like, throwback at noon.
Yeah.
And people love it and it makes people happy, yet, like, no one's really... And but it's all like these drum machines, and there's a hip hop side to it, and there's a sense of humor to it, and it's funny, but then it's like really avant garde musically, and it's super risky and weird. And we found a way to, like, it was like the ultimate highbrow, lowbrow, forgotten gem of music that we liked,
yeah,
pretty much. And so we were like, okay, like that's gonna be our thing, you know. And I think, looking back, it's like, I think that a lot of the bands that I relate to, you know, are kind of like dorky white dudes paying tribute to like black music that they love. But there's always like a degree of esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when Keith and Mick were like learning about this really weird blues and buying, you know, Chess records, you know, from the Chess label,
right,
in Chicago, like just esoteric stuff. And then, you know, you read about Donald Fagen, you know, listening to this very strange, obscure jazz and mixing it with show tunes and very kitschy music.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously I'm not comparing myself to these people, but I just felt the parallel, you know, with the way P and I were so detached because we were like these weird second generation immigrant kids, you know, who are actually English as our second language.
Yeah.
And we're in Montreal, Canada, under the snow, and we're buying, you know, Rick James records and listening to like song 3 side B, like sort of picking it apart, you know. It was compelling to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a while for Chromeo to get, you know, taken seriously and accepted. And
that's I think fascinating for me. Again, someone like 2 Chainz, it takes a while for him to get to his thing. In today's record business, they don't do artist development anymore. They don't let you.
I mean, there's a guy who's hired to do it.
That's right.
But like, there's just no time to.
Yeah. So,
or budget.
You guys, like, we obviously celebrate your entire catalog.
But, I don't, but okay.
Okay, no. I mean,
but look, I
you still play like 100% like live, right?
Not much.
Okay. Tenderoni,
Needy Girl, and Tenderoni.
Yeah.
We have to.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
For us,
you just can't. Yeah, exactly. But like, there's a lot of people who just know you from White Women, your last record. Like, there's a lot of people who were introduced.
But there's also a lot of people for whom like Bonafide and Tenderoni were the jams.
Totally.
Yeah.
And like now they kind of like the new stuff, but they want to go. I mean, it's listen. We've had like. What, and I knock on wood because I hope it keeps going.
Yeah.
But we've had what any like artist can hope for, which is like many moments.
Yeah, agreed.
We've had the moment where we came out and it was like, okay, I like Fisher Spooner and what's up with these guys, Chromeo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was like 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had the like mega MySpace, like what the hell is up with Chromeo? And I also love Justice and Mastercraft and Cut Copy and Let's All Go Party and basically North America discovering electronic music.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was another moment. Then we had another like 2010 Grizzly Bear and Chromeo playing on the same stage, like during this big indie revival, but like somehow Chromeo's still here. Okay. And like that's when our videos became really good, so like people were like gravitating towards that. And then with the last album, we kind of had like our first pop look.
Yeah.
And I mean,
like getting into Vogue and the,
yeah, but also getting on the radio.
Oh, true. Crazy, yeah,
you know? And into commercials.
And into commercials more. And I mean, It's really humbling, you know. we're still learning, and it's weird. Like I always say, this like we're not supposed to be here. You know, we're well into our 30s. We don't conform to the norm of what a contemporary pop artist or electronic artist looks, feels, sounds like.
Right,
you know,
right.
We're total oddballs, and somehow there's still interest in us, and we still find it super motivating to create this like weird universe that we've created.
I think that makes it all the better.
Yeah, I mean it's awesome.
You're not cookie cutter, which is great.
We're very known. We're not.
So let's take it back for a second. Our good friend Brian Reddy was the first person to hip us to you guys through MySpace.
Mm.
What did MySpace mean to you, and how did you sort
everything.
Of come to find it?
Everything.
Who
it
was in
everything.
Your top 8?
A-Track.
Mm-hmm.
The Cool Kids, I think.
Okay.
Oh, man. Mastercraft?
Tom.
No, Tom was out. Turbo recording.
You took Tom out?
We took Tom out. I don't remember. I mean, it would rotate. But, I mean, well, here's the thing is that, like, when we came up, it was like I had just moved to New York. I was just, you know, starting my studies at Columbia. This was going to be my hobby. And you had a whole new scene of New York bands coming out, like, post The Strokes. You know, and it was like Fisher Spooner and Scissor Sisters and The Rapture and Andrew W.K. and all that. And, like, we kind of came, and our music was very different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it was also the beginning of hipsters. You know what I mean? It was the beginning of... It was like this whole new paradigm.
Wow, you were hipster to hipsters.
Maybe, yeah.
You hipsters of the hipster movement.
Or like the least hip and not hip enough. I mean,
right,
knows,
but,
you know
but that's
mean?
Like so that moment, though.
Yeah, and it was very confusing. But but that happened, and then like our first album came out and nobody really got it, but like Needy Girl kind of stayed in the electronic community, so that was cool. But then, like, somehow MySpace gave us this total second wind. And the fact that, like, we didn't get much press or much attention and word of mouth about us in New York was perhaps, like, divided. But then, like, MySpace exposed us to this whole other younger demographic that lumped us in with, you know, whether it be, like, French electro or mashups, and we were like, okay, whatever, and it worked, and it was amazing, and that kind of gave us a look for, you know, 5 more years.
So, what's the measure of success in that moment? Do you find yourself looking at the play counter and seeing it just going up exponentially?
Yes, and also like we
you're getting
went,
more followers.
Yeah, and then no, but more than that, it was IRL too. Like I remember before, so I spent a year in France. Actually, I went there to study, but I ended up doing the Fancy Footwork album out there. And I left in September 06, and our show was like Cake Shop. And we were so psyched because we sold it out. You know? And like they were like, yo, 300 people came tonight. And we were like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
This felt like the accumulation of like 2 years of grind. And then when I came back in the summer of 07, we were selling out Bowery Ballroom.
Yeah.
And doing all these like sold out shows across the U.S. And it was, I mean, to this day, it was one of like the greatest things I've ever experienced. But you know, it's always that moment where things click, and that's what it happened, and that's when we also became like a heavy touring band. You know, and we decided to really, we cut our teeth on the road, and us playing a lot and building, you know, an entertaining and compelling and funny and danceable and party like live show was a big key to our success. And we still take our live show very seriously. You know, the stage production is the whole thing, and we work with contemporary artists, and it's always with us, it's always this, you know, again, like you could really enjoy it on a bass level, or you can nerd out.
Yeah.
And that's I mean, you know, being that it's a table full of nerds tonight.
You're in a safe space.
Yeah, I mean, it's a safe space, but it's also, you know, it's a table full of nerds who love Cameron.
Yeah.
I think that's very important. It's very sincere. I don't think people like us enjoy Cameron ironically. We genuinely love Cam.
Correct.
Genuinely know every single song, and that's I'm including Confessions of Fire.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
And I'm including the artwork to Confessions of Fire. You know, and it's a sincere thing. It's not like haha, it's funny, because really you wouldn't put yourself through that if it was just funny.
Right.
You know? And that's what I say about people with Chromio. It's like, yo, if we were a joke band, like the joke gets old. It's been almost 10 years, we're still here, like there's more to it.
Yeah.
And I think we've been able to kind of ride that dual pleasure, you know, where you can enjoy it on a nerdy perspective and get all the references, or you can just have fun and dance and
Hey. Have you, that's our brother Dan.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. There's a third?
The, how's that for a guest star?
Yeah, but he's not real.
No, he's here. He exists.
He's kind of real.
Dan, this is Dave.
Yeah, nice to meet
Dave,
you.
Dave, Dan.
Wow.
Hey, Dan.
Okay. We're twins.
Yeah, Dan and Jeff are twins.
Really?
Yeah.
Fraternal, obviously.
Insane.
And Dan works for Madison Square Garden.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, okay. Dan's the real, like...
And so,
he's
wow.
the suit, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And you live here, too.
Yeah. Three bed, two bath, elevator door man. Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I mean, I, you know, as you know, I have a younger brother, so I love the sibling flow.
Yeah. Well, you start touring around the country. Were you going to say something about that, Jeff?
Well, I was wondering, like, you know, whose idea was it to have the legs and
surface to air. Mm-hmm. But again, like super nerdy reference. So I'm in Paris. We're finishing the Fancy Footwork record, and then like you know, I find this kind of crew of like really cool Frenchy slick art directors, and I get with them, and they give us the whole rebrand, and I, you know, we started a really cool and sort of fecund collaboration with them. Sometimes I use words that are possible in English, but they sound much better in French.
Right.
Anyway,
Fanute.
Fanute.
From French.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. French Moroccan. Yeah. Like me. So they had the idea, but they took it. There's a great video by ZZ Top called Rough Boy, and there's a table with legs, and that's where we got the ref. You know, so it's always been that thing where, you know, if you want to get esoteric, we can go on a YouTube Google image K-hole and show you where everything sort of came from and where we got all our ideas. And we're very open about the fact that we, you know, we work in a way that's like we don't claim to invent anything. We just recontextualize and personalize. But we're very open about the sources that, because that's the pleasure for us.
We're
diggers. It's the same mentality as when you collect records as a kid, you know. Or sneakers, or whatever you want.
Totally.
But we also like things to look slick and be enjoyable on a total face value.
So wait, so you didn't like grow up on like Hall & Oates, and you didn't grow up on like...
No, I grew up on Van Morrison.
Billy Joel.
No,
yeah.
No, nobody knows what that is. Like, it's not New York. Like, no. I grew up on my dad's music, which was, you know, Van Morrison and Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm. That's where it stopped.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, and you know, and some Stones and some Beatles and you know, baby boomer stuff.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And then I got into like heavier stuff from that same period, you know, so like Hendrix and Zeppelin, and then like somehow, you know, we were like every other kid who's my age who was wearing fat pants and, you know, skating and smoking and putzing around in the alleyways trying to ollie and listening to, you know, like listening to Kashmir, and somehow So What You Want comes on and it's like, wait, those guys look like us,
right?
They're rapping, but they're not wearing polka dot shirts and doing the Running Man. So this, they're kind of like us, and well, maybe this could be cool skate music or whatever. And then that's when the rap.
So comes. What does it mean, like, when you go to Live from Daryl's House at Daryl Hall's? I mean, is that like, because you don't have like that nostalgic?
No,
you know, thing,
I mean,
so it's just
I
like,
look at it like an. I mean, I discovered Hall & Oates in 2000. Mm-hmm. Really, like, I mean, I knew the songs because they played at the dentist when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and so I knew Kiss on My List, but I never knew it as Daryl Hall. I knew it as the song from the dentist.
Right. Sure,
you know what I mean.
So it's painful.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool.
Yeah.
But
no,
then
no.
You know, I didn't know there was like a drum machine in there, and like you know that it was called like Soul and all that. I just knew it as Dentist.
Yeah.
And then when we made the Chromeo musical mood board, you know. And started like basically digging and like learning more about that kind of music. Again, like the first time I really became aware of what Hall & Oates was, you know, De La Soul sampled them.
That's
because I did not know that music. So when I became aware of them, and I were like, well, they're amazing, and they're you know, this pioneering group and all that, and we, you know, we sort of name dropped them a lot because we felt they weren't getting enough credit. I mean, so I go to Daryl's house. But I tell him, like, you know, my relationship to his music is there's, it's not immediate.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of like there's a step between him and me.
Right.
It could be De La, or it could be, you know, us starting to learn more about that kind of music.
Sure.
And I think he knows, but it's cool. But it's really not like, oh my God, I grew up on Daryl Hall.
Right. Right.
Like, for me to have that feeling would be. Live from Killer Priest's house.
Okay.
That would be, you're like, yo, I grew up, you know, rapping like you. Or you know, rest in peace, Sean Price. Or,
yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
Live from Drew Ha's house.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
live
yeah.
Live from Pharaoh Monch's house.
Gotcha.
Or, you know, what would be a large live cooking with Large Professor. You know, that would be like, oh my God, I grew up listening to your music.
Right.
You know, Daryl is more like,
yeah, a guy, yeah.
He's like, you're dope.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I do.
So it's just like any like stop on the press tour, basically.
No, of course not. No, I mean, it's phenomenal, but it's an honor and it's amazing. But he knows that, like,
yeah.
He's happy because we discovered his stuff later.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I mean, the same way, like when I see like a kid a Hypebeast kid mm-hmm. who comes up to me now in Soho and is like, yo, Chromio, and he's also a Travis Scott fan, it feels almost more gratifying than when I see the MySpace fans. I mean, because I'm like, yo, it's actually, it keeps going.
Right.
So what Daryl loves about us is that to him, we're like the Travis Scott Hypebeast kids who still fuck with his music.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the best feeling in the world.
What is your favorite Hall & Oates song?
It's funny because like last night I went on a Hall & Oates K-hole.
Yeah.
I like the hits.
Okay,
I
think, yeah.
I mean, you know, my favorite song is actually Adult Education.
I was just, yeah, that's my favorite, yeah, yeah.
Which is actually, it's not a hit, it's a B-side.
Right.
God. But yeah, that's my favorite song.
That's the dopest.
Yeah, yeah.
Yours, Jeff?
I don't know. I was just thinking about the video, though, for Adult Education.
Yeah. Which I mean, is... the videos are, they're brazy.
Yeah.
A lot about them is just, you know, and I mean... And P Thug, you know, still borrows heavily from the Book of Daryl Hall style 2015, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. with the blades and the,
yep.
the boot cut. You know, I but Daryl's our man, you know, and we're still close with him. And
yeah.
It's just an honor, you know, but it's an honor when it goes from Daryl to Travis, who's also a
totally,
fan, you know,
right.
And it's like, I'm just happy that we're still in the conversation and that my music can actually dialogue with people from different. You know,
for sure.
Yeah,
because as you guys know, when we came up, you know, music was very unilateral.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. you know, and it was Mobb Deep, Wu-Tang, and you could not really listen to. I've never heard Pavement. I don't know what Pavement is.
Right,
neither have I. Have you?
No. Okay. I know of them.
We're all the same age, and we all came up the same way, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like when Pavement was popping,
right?
And you were like us. You could not listen to I don't know what it is.
Right.
I've never heard it.
Right.
All these people that I read about sometimes on Pitchfork, like, I'm just like, I don't know who they are. Like, Nick Cave.
Don't know.
Loco.
It's
me. And it sucks because we're probably missing out on great stuff. But, you know, one thing that's great in the era that we live in is that it's super eclectic and, you know, and I think we all benefit from that.
Right. Totally.
There's way more dialogue happening.
We interviewed you for MTV down in Austin City Limits in 2012, yeah. I think. Same year that Stevie Wonder was there. Did you get a chance to see him live?
Nah, I didn't. I saw him in other contexts, but P saw him live a bunch and he breaks out the talk box and he gets real P-funk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, you know, those guys. It's like, it's tough, man. Like, a lot of those musicians... I look at them and I'm like, you know, if bands like that level of musicianship, you know, I would not have a job today. I mean, some people, that's the other thing is like.
But you're the CEO of your, you know, corporation, so yeah, you do have a job.
You've got a backup.
People sometimes ask me in interviews, like, wouldn't you love it to be like in the 80s playing alongside Prince? And I'm like, yo, I couldn't play alongside. I wouldn't even be good enough to be Prince's guitar tech. I would get fired after one show. I wouldn't even be good enough to be. You know, the local Minneapolis off-brand Paisley Park
funny
guitar
enough,
tech.
Funny, you know? Funny enough, we have a friend named Fafu
who was guitar tech.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Fafu probably, you know, plays circles all around me. So it's like, you know, no, I don't want to go back to the 80s and play with those guys because we wouldn't have had a chance. Our thing worked because it was a recontextualization. You know what I mean? And that's why it worked. You know?
Growing up, when did Much Music come into your life?
Early,
So are they playing a lot of American stuff on there?
Yep.
Oh, they are.
Well, they had like there's some like Canadian like.
Well, let me tell you guys something.
Edict.
Sorry to cut. Yeah. There is. Canada in the '80s was popping music. Like Canada in the '80s. I mean now.
Wait, who's coming up in the '80s in Canada?
I'll tell you. But like now, you know, you go to Canada and it's very easy. To be like, all right, they still got the square plates in every restaurant and the purple lights and everything's fuchsia. And like, you know, the music might not... I mean, indie, you know, Canadian music is incredible and it's sterling. But maybe like more mainstream Canadian rock doesn't make it to the U.S. And, you know, so you could be critical, although Drake, you know, kills everything.
Yeah.
So that whole point is moot. But Canada in the 80s, first of all, Parachute Pants are from Montreal. Let me just say this.
Oh, okay. All right.
Parachute Pants came from Montreal.
Yeah, give credit.
So Parachute Pants and bagels, two Montreal things, just...
Dude, Leonard Cohen. I mean, maybe not even... But in the 80s, Canadian pop music was amazing. And it was like, you couldn't tell if it was Canadian or American. So I come up, I come down here and I'm like, what do you mean? You guys don't know Glass Tiger? Or like, you don't know, what is this band? I mean, all those amazing Canadian bands that I thought everybody knew because they were playing on Much Music alongside. But then, you know, I re-listened to Bryan Adams' Reckless the other day, Canadian.
Yeah.
And like, sonically, that's like Dr. Dre.
Wow.
Like, I mean, that record, seriously, that is like, that's like the Chronic of 80s rock music.
By the way, that is the best pull quote we're going to get.
But no, but really, like, Bryan Adams Reckless, like sonically, I'm telling you, Dr. Dre would be here and be like, this is amazing.
Who would be Bryan Adams Snoop?
Well, he did. Bryan Adams was a producer, but like, I guess like the side, Corey Hart, you know? In
Canada,
And by the way, Corey Hart, like, is that, you didn't, I mean, when that was popping, it didn't sound Canadian. It was just tremendous. It was massive.
You know?
So I really have this theory that Canada in the 80s was just crushing it on a pop musical level. But then I come down here and I'm like, well, nobody knows Thompson Twins? Or like, I'm looking for them in the karaoke book and they're not there. You
know? But Thompson Twins, they were from like Australia, weren't they?
Oh, really? See, I couldn't tell. It was the Commonwealth.
Well,
I
thought that Engelbert Humperdinck was from Canada, but he was from Britain. And I thought that Helen Reddy was from Canada, but she's from Australia.
And then, Thomas Dolby, I was never sure. You know, there's a lot of these people where I was never sure.
Well, do all Canadians know each other, number one?
That is a good question.
Well, here in the city, you must run into a lot of Canadians.
No.
And they're just, really?
No.
Or that you just can't tell.
But I don't know all the other Canadians. Like, it's,
Nelly Furtado.
Don't know her.
Bare Naked Ladies.
Don't know them. Never met them. But I fucks with them heavy, and they are in many ways ancestors to Chromeo.
Sure.
Yeah. Do you know Sloane from Entourage?
Is she Canadian?
She's actually from Montreal.
Oh, yeah. Her I've stalked, but okay. I don't know her.
Was she in your top eight?
Personal. She's Jewish Moroccan, I think.
Really?
Yeah. But I don't know. But I don't even know. I'm not even tight with guys I should be tight with, like Mr. Morgan, you know, who works with OVO. You guys know him?
My
brother knows him, but like me and Morgan don't really, like, not no beef. It's just so weird that we don't run into each other more.
Right. You should go to more Brooklyn Nets games.
Or you should go to Canada. Everybody should go to Canada.
Yeah, it's weird. But anyways, I don't run into that many Canadians. It's great to run into Canadians.
Do you have a secret handshake? Is there a...
No, but like, you know, the ketchup chips joke. There's a lot of cool shared experiences, and it's a vibe.
So for white women, you had an amazing rollout. We loved how you had down at Milk. It was everything was white there, including
the car.
We just wanted to have fun with it because, again, like, it's like, how do you create that moment where you know you're a band that's been around for you know, three albums already, this is your fourth album, and how do you get people excited again? And also, how do you reinsert yourself in a new context?
Yeah.
And that's what we did, and we took our time to do it, and I think it worked.
And so you guys, you and P sort of like hold yourself into your studio in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
To make this album?
Yeah. In the last one, yeah. We're changing it up for this
one. So I was going to ask, now that you're in commercials and you're playing Made in America and you're touring all the time on a bigger level, you're on the radio.
We're on the radio. We're playing Central Park, selling it out.
When do you tell Atlantic and Big Beat, hey, we're going to Paris and we're going to rent out like a mansion like Rolling Stones did?
No, I ain't doing that.
Okay.
It wasn't in Paris. It was in the south of France.
Oh, I'm sorry. South of France.
No, we're not doing any of that.
But do you need that change of scenery?
Well, we are. I am like, you know, I am doing stuff like, all right, like this new Jason Derulo song sounds like the kind of stuff I do. And I kind of really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, who did that song? And yes, Atlantic, can you put me in touch with him?
Mm-hmm.
And then I get in touch with him. So happens it's a super Chromeo fan, and Derulo's a super Chromeo fan.
Amazing.
And it's like, yo, let's hang out, let's make music in LA.
Can you get Jason Derulo to say Jason Derulo on your song?
Obviously, like, the best song on planet Earth, you know, civilization right now, is like the Weeknd song.
Yes.
Right? And
Canadian.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And like, it's, the whole thing's amazing, and it's like, kind of almost makes me want to just, you know, go back to Columbia and finish my PhD. I don't know what I'm doing right now. But, like, it's great. But The Weeknd's, he's already the coolest guy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the coolest guy in the world makes the coolest song in the world. It's great. But, like, you got to give it to my man Derulo, because Derulo's, like, walking with the funny faux hawk, and, like, no one's walking around in our circles, you know, being like, yo, I'm a Derulo fan. But his new song is cool and great, and it's way harder to make somebody like Derulo cool in our very cynical, jaded circle. Sure. You know, so
no, you're right.
Kind of, like, I kind of, like, to me, he's, like, the underdog in that Song of the Year thing with that song, because he had way more to do.
Yeah.
To get on my iPod.
True,
right. You know, the weekend gets on my iPod. It's like U2. Like, he's just there.
Yeah.
It's like Chink's drugs. Like,
right.
Peace, like, whatever, yeah, or Max, yeah. B or French, whatever those guys do, we buy.
Right.
Yeah.
Derulo, I'm surprised I'm buying a Derulo record.
I'm surprised you are too. I actually don't know if I know it.
Yo, that song is so good.
What song is it?
Want to Want Me?
I don't know it.
By the way, it's some straight up 80s like electro stuff.
That's crazy. I feel like
it's dope.
We were supposed to do something with him like years ago.
You should.
No? Yeah. Well, now it's too late. Yeah.
Now, just some quick ones from some notes we just thought of beforehand. Are you allowed to drop by the Columbia campus whenever you want and just sort of like
give a guest lecture?
Not lecture.
Okay.
Oh, I don't. Nah, not like.
Can you just sit in the classroom and like watch?
Maybe I could.
Okay.
I think
you're not like
audit.
The Pope Emeritus, that you can like just, you know, go wherever you want.
No, no, but I went back there a couple of weeks ago just to like.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Speaking of college, and you mentioned Minya before. That's misinfo for everyone who doesn't know.
She's an alum from Columbia, right?
She is. Yeah. And also, she has a 100-day-old baby.
I saw that.
Yeah. We were on the phone with her a couple weeks ago, and she said that she wasn't sure that college would be relevant by the time her son, you know, was 18 and ready to go.
Whoa.
What do you think about that?
I don't want to challenge that, because I'd have to get the context, because, like, Minya's a really, really smart woman.
Yeah.
And, like, she probably has compelling reasons to say that. But I am also very much a fan of, like, the humanities and the, mm-hmm. and the canon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I
also, socially, doesn't, I mean, it, like,
yeah.
sort of...
Yeah, well, not to bastardize her argument, but basically it was, she was saying that kids who are born now will probably end up going to associate's degree schools or, like, you know, technical schools or schools that are just, like, directed towards whatever you are supposed to.
And she
do
also
as a
felt
job.
like younger and younger people are creating their own businesses.
Sure.
And... Yeah. Yeah. Finding success at a point where they don't need to sort of...
Yeah, that's fine, but it's like... But to me, that's like all the more reason to take 3 years of your life, go sleep in a weird bed, and read Plato. Because mm-hmm. you're... Because to me, counterintuitively, it's because that stuff is less and less readily accessible that we've got to force ourselves for 3 to 4 years... and read Heidegger, just so that stuff doesn't die, because it's part of Western culture. And by the way, I'm not just talking about dead old white men. I mean,
right.
It could be, you know, film school where you study Spike Lee
sure.
flicks, or, you know, American literature and so on. But, like, studying these works of art that are part of, you know, the Western tradition, for lack of a better term, and let's make that as broad as possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not obvious and automatic in today's context to become acquainted with them.
Right.
So for me, it's like all the more reason to send your kid to college for 3 years. Let him learn that. Let that live with him. Let that guide him through life.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can go back and start his own business and make money straight off the iPhone and do what he does. It's all good. You know what I mean?
I feel like kids today, like the Wikipediaization of kids, where mm-hmm. it's like everything is accessible. And so, like, you know, all you have to do is just read the first paragraph of Richard Wright's, you know, biography or whatever, and mm-hmm. be like, oh, okay, well, that's Black Boy. You know, I know mm-hmm. what Black Boy is, you know.
There's you find that maybe college or like kind of a more formal introduction to that will add layers.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Yeah.
I think so.
How did you first meet Solange, and will she definitely be a part of your third project in a row?
Considering, yeah.
I know, right? I met her through Alain,
mm-hmm.
Maytrak.
He knows everybody.
Knows everybody, and he was friends with her in the MySpace days.
Okay.
And she was a fan of Chromeo, and she's super hip. And
yeah.
I love working with her. I don't know if she'll be on this next album. I'd love it. It would be a thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Has she ever asked you to work on one of her projects?
She hasn't,
okay.
but I don't feel a way about that.
Yeah, no.
You know, she's got her own
curious.
Thing. And actually, that's not true. She has.
Oh, cool.
That's not even true. She had, in the early days, pre pre, like, I want to say 2010, she mentioned it. She was like, you guys should come to the house and all that, you know, so that's not even true. Yeah.
Why did your parents double down on making your brother's name very French?
That's so weird, right? I know. Yeah. And I'm David. But isn't there a thing where in a lot of the times, like, the oldest son is called David or...
I mean, I'm Eric. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird, right? Like, yeah, and they gave him this super French name. I never quite figure that one out.
I will say, as an American...
Alon.
I'm just like, I don't know...
Everyone, Alon, Elaine. I mean, poor guy.
Yeah.
But Alain is a really cool, stylish name, and I'm happy he has it. And also it kind of fits him.
Yeah. You know, speaking of stylish, you are one of the most stylish people, you know, known on the internet.
Yeah, $1,500 shoes.
Yeah. when was the last time?
Sorry. Do you want to up that amount?
Not at all. I want to actually...
Lower it?
I don't think it's about the dollar amount. Sure. I think style has nothing to do with dollar amount.
I agree.
How you wear it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just how you express yourself personally. And anyways, it's all good.
Well, when was the last time you wore a hat? And when was the last time you wore sneakers?
I wore sneakers when I went to Jamaica a couple months ago. But I actually put them on to go get a package in the lobby 2 days ago.
Okay.
Vans. And I wore a hat. It's funny again, that too, because my girl brought that up. Because she was like, yeah. And I mean, her and I had known each other a long time. But And she was like, yeah, in 2008, we went to this Vampire Weekend show, and you might have been wearing a fedora. Listen, first of all, like, this whole style thing, like, thank you for that. But, like, just for the record, like, up until a few years ago, I really did not have it together, and it's very much like music for me. It's been a learning process. You know, I didn't have any innate stylistic disposition. I wasn't born with a tremendous music or a great musical talent, or I wasn't a virtuoso or anything like that. I learned everything, and I mean, stylistic missteps, I think I have a whole phone book of, you know, that make me want to really just...
That's what Throwback Thursday is for, so...
Yes, and I don't hide them. I wear them on my sleeve. But yeah, and in terms of style stuff now, I think it's just, you know, P and I, what we celebrate is you know, eminently personal humor. Any eminently personal style that doesn't take itself too seriously. And yeah, I might have like stuff that's expensive or stuff that's not, but I don't think it's about the dollar amount.
No. Mm-hmm. Is there anything of P's that you could find yourself rocking, including Zubaz, or like a braided, like long beard?
I mean, now it's like I've got a diamond earring now, so like, and you know, we both wear vintage T-shirts, so there's definitely an overlap.
Okay. Yeah. In Over Your Shoulder, you start off talking about Serena, as in Serena Williams. Mm. I don't know if you saw this today, but there were pictures of Drake and Serena at a Cincinnati restaurant making out.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Do you feel proud of your fellow countryman, Drake?
Sure. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
Wait. So which one was with Common?
Serena, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So really, Drake like finally finished that beef off.
Wow. Just,
yeah. Finally. Finally. I'm so glad that
Drake
beef is
over. Good with beef.
Yeah.
I never knew.
Things you should not bring up at Fool's Gold this year.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm really looking forward to that.
Same here.
Because I think, what if Meek really crushes it? You know?
Yeah.
Which he might. And or, I mean, who knows? New York crowds are unforgiving, and you know, beef notwithstanding, Meek's got great songs.
He does, yeah.
You know, but it was definitely a bizarre episode. And,
well, how about this? Yeah. As a Canadian...
I mean, next podcast, we'll do a whole podcast.
Sure. Just one last thing on this. As a Canadian, to see someone like Drake take his city to crazy levels, to have his own, what Clark Kent called his own summer jam.
Yeah.
And this is all done within the last... Six years. How does that, like, can you comprehend that?
I can, and I really wish A-Track and I would have done that in Montreal sooner.
Mm.
And we've been talking about doing it, and we want to do it. And that's really, look, I mean, Drake came out the box with massive pop songs and massive resources. And, I mean, massive rap songs and massive pop songs. And he had the means to go back to Toronto and shut it down. I came to New York and it took me 10 years to get Chromio to where it is now. And it's still not doing Drake numbers. So I want to go back to Montreal and shut it down with a track, but it's taking us a minute, and we will. And I just think what he did is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, I mean, all those guys are just, you know, they set examples for and they're motivating. You mm-hmm. know, you look at that stuff and you're just motivated. So it's great.
Yeah. Is it surprising to see a Canadian be aggressive?
Drake be aggressive is surprising to okay. me. I knew a lot of gangster Canadian rappers mm-hmm. when I came up over there, so that doesn't surprise me. And there's some it's wild up there, you know. So like in my city and in Toronto, in certain parts of Toronto, so it's totally as real as any other American city. But seeing Drake really go in and get aggressive is not only surprising, it's also impressive and wildly entertaining.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so and bring it on, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and hey, maybe somebody one day will
challenge him.
Challenge him.
Sure.
And it'll be even more fun. I mean, that's what we want, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I'm sure that's what he wants, by the way.
Too. Yeah. I bet he wanted.
One thing I know Drake.
Mm-hmm.
My brother knows him more than me, but like I'm cool with Drake and Drake. The first time I met him, he sang the whole Mama's Boy song
to Whoa.
Me, back to me. So yeah, so yeah, I mean, he listens.
That's
to
really dope. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, he's an awesome dude. And what's great about Drake, and I think that's why, you know, he's winning now, is that Drake's in on the joke.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's totally in on the joke.
Yeah.
And he gets it on so many levels. I mean, Kanye is like that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are guys that can be passionate and then in a blink of an eye make fun of themselves or self-paradise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you're able to do that, you're stronger than anybody.
Yeah. And I think we're all of a like mind.
Well, it speaks to us.
Yeah.
You know, it speaks to us. And you know, with P and I mean, not only did we have to have thick skin when people didn't understand what our band was about in the early days, but also we were able to actually exaggerate the stuff that people thought was campy about us to the point where it wasn't even campy anymore.
Yeah.
It was just real.
Yeah.
You know, and it's Cam with the pink.
Right? Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just, at one point, you got to embrace it, and people stop thinking it's whack or corny or ridiculous, and they're like, "Yo, this is iconic,"
right?
You know, and
it takes them a minute to catch up. Yeah,
well, not but that's the lint roll, right?
Yeah.
the world's most iconic lint.
That's right. Dave, we appreciate you coming back to the Upper West Side. Yo, rocking
this
with
was
us.
Awesome, thank you. I wish. I mean, it's like,
and there will be a part two.
Yeah. It's like
there's a lot
like
to cover.
Really go in.
Oh, for sure.
You know, but yeah.
Oh well, I'm very happy that you got to meet Dan as well.
Yeah.
That's such a weird. Like that was, by the way, for people who aren't seeing this. There's a plate of cut up vegetables. We're sitting in a kitchen. In comes the third, it's the real, with mm-hmm. a suit and mm-hmm. pants up to his abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks like the two other dudes. I mean, this is short film material. This is like a short film right here. Anyways, guys, man. Thank you.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.